Now, the show that is all baseball.
They're better than they were a year ago.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork, Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Zing Zang Cocktail in a Can, Wind Waste Innovations, and Woodbridge Wines.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now the Red Sox looking for a little bit of breathing room. Here comes Xander.
Get this insurance run here, too. Get another run across.
That is a high deep drive to left. Watch this one go. Home run for the X-Man.
Did you happen to catch the re-signed Xander chance?
Yeah, I heard it.
What's that mean to you?
I mean, if I struck out, it wouldn't help my cause, you know?
There you go. Xander Bogaerts in a laughing mood after the Red Sox beat the Astros last night. 6-3 was the final score over at Fenway Park. Many of you probably didn't see the end of that game. Can't blame you. It was a rain delay there. But the Red Sox, when they resumed play, got a big bottom of the eighth inning. J.D. Martinez with a go-ahead hit. Xander Bogaerts in the bottom of the eighth with a two-run home run to make the game 6-3. And again, I don't know if you could hear the crowd or not. Jimmy Stewart, maybe we can isolate just that part of it, help people hear it a little bit. But if you did not hear it, when Bogaerts came to the plate last night, I talked about this yesterday, that one of the disadvantages of being a bad team, if that's what they are, and I don't think they're out of it yet, but look, it is what it is at this stage, is that we're on May 15th, and already the story is now Xander Bogaerts' contract. And there is a development on this Bogaerts story today as it pertains to whether or not he would re-sign with the Red Sox, which we'll get to momentarily. I'm going to ask for the help of Jim Murray on that one. He read something earlier that I found interesting. But when Bogaerts came to the plate last night, in the bottom of the eighth, the crowd broke into a chant of re-sign Xander.
Get this insurance right.
Okay, so again, Kevin Uecker is focused on the game. I can't blame him. But nonetheless, re-sign Xander. You heard it over and over again. He then hits a two-run home run. And I warned you that this would become a story if the team was bad. That all of a sudden, and the danger here for the Red Sox is that selfish interests, not just for Bogaerts, but for everyone else, start to overrun what their goals are for 2022. It's going to take the leadership of Alex Cora, the discipline of Bogaerts, who didn't really bite all that much on the topic last night, not to mention all the other impending free agents on the Red Sox who are going to start playing for themselves if they don't get back in this race. Now, the good news is that they did last night, and we'll talk baseball for the next hour as a result. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Hour. We will take your calls up until 7 o'clock, at which point we'll turn it over to Adam Jones for a little bit. Then we'll go right into Celtics pregame and game one of the Eastern Conference final series between the Celtics and the Miami Heat. And before we get back to baseball, let me just tell you again the breaking news that Jim Murray revealed just a moment ago. Murray, in fact, if you want to just repeat it, Marcus Smart is out tonight, but that's not the big news.
Yeah, Al Horford also out for the Celtics as he is in the NBA's health and safety protocol.
Okay, so no Smart, no Horford, game one on the road against the Heat tonight. I would think that things shifted here in Miami's favor. Interestingly enough, just quickly, the betting line earlier in the day moved. Miami went from Murray, it was a 1.5 point favorite to 2.5.
Yeah.
Which suggested that Vegas had some inside information. My guess is that it related to Al Horford.
Absolutely.
So we already knew that Marcus Smart was iffy, but Al Horford now also out. Again, 617-779-0985. The developing news on Xander Bogaerts. If you remember, Xander Bogaerts, and we talked about this last night, over the weekend, told Peter Abraham of the Boston Globe that he would be amenable or open to negotiating with the Red Sox during the season if they came to him with a good offer. I don't have the exact quote in front of me at the moment, but Bogaerts effectively said, rather, to Peter Abraham of the Globe was, if they come to Scott Boras, his agent, and it's something fair, then yes, I will allow him to talk to me about it. That is what Bogaerts said. today. Who got in touch with Boris again, Murray? Who,
yeah, what? Pete Abraham tweeted about an hour ago, spoke to Scott Boris this afternoon. He said definitively that any negotiations with Xander Bogaerts would wait until after the season, and he looks forward to talking to the Red Sox about a, quote, championship-proven player.
Okay, so again, the championship-proven player fact, you can take it and stuff it.
That's just agent speak.
Well, that's typical Boris, you know, telling me that Jacoby Ellsbury's a premium player. Every guy Boris has is a premium championship-proven player. You ever notice that? Every guy. He tries to sell every guy as some sort of premium talent, quote unquote. In this case, it's fair, but I think he's doing damage control from what Bogaerts said over the weekend. The last thing Boris wants to do is kill Bogaerts' his market momentum. So I want to get to your calls on Bogaerts. Do you think as a fan that the crowd chanting that at Fenway Park, if Bogaerts continues to play well, and the crowd gets behind him, would that put enough pressure on the Red Sox to do something aggressive in terms of retaining Xander Bogaerts? How do you feel about that? Okay, that's number one tonight. 617-779-0985, because I have my own personal opinions there. And then secondly, a caller said this last night. I said I wanted to get more into it tonight, and I do. A caller suggested last night, Chaim Bloom was hired from Tampa Bay to do what the Rays typically have had to do, which is to say, when a player has gotten to the point where he was going to start making big money, whether Tampa Bay had signed him or not, because in the case of Evan Longoria, for example, Tampa Bay had signed him to a long contract, but the values escalated in the back end of the deal, and the Rays weren't going to be able to afford him at that point. So they traded him to the San Francisco Giants. And they did the same basically with other players on their roster. If they didn't leave via free agency, Tampa typically had to move on from those guys because they have to restock their farm system and sustain a feeding system that allows them to compete every year. Okay, that's what the logic is in Tampa. And I get it. They have no choice. They can't sign premium free agents. But a caller said yesterday, Bloom is here to not just do that with Mookie Betts, but to do it with Bogaerts, Devers, and I'm assuming by default, other players down the road that the Red Sox have similar circumstances with. Meaning, whenever they get to year six or seven, if they don't sign a guy, you're going to have to move him, and you're going to have to get prospects back. He said Bloom is here to do that. My question to you is, do you believe in Chaim Bloom being the guy to execute it? Because I hear people like Tyler Milliken on the Midday Show all the time tell me, Chaim Bloom is dunking on your head. As it relates to the traditional baseball guys, Chaim Bloom is dunking on your head. Is he? So I want to examine the trades. We could talk about some of the good things Chaim Bloom has done, and I think he's a capable executive. I do. I want to examine some of those big trades he made. I'm not sure they're as good as everyone thinks or people like Milliken think, and I'm not sure he's dunking on my head. So we'll do that as well. We'll get to Trevor's story, who homered last night. Is he coming out of it? I have an opinion and an answer for you on that. But we'll kick it off tonight with our buddy Tom and Quincy on Xander Bogaerts. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, yeah, Maz, there's a couple things. You know, we've been talking for almost a year about what happens with Bogaerts coming up. And the fact that he's playing literally out of his mind all season. And as far as, like, the nerds that were peeing on his defensive metrics and all that crap. Haven't seen much of that this year. The guy just can hit. He's a professional player. He's a legitimate, big-time professional hitter. And the fact that he is outplaying Story to the degree that he is makes that move so much effing worse, it's not even funny. So the whole thing where, all right, he wants 30. You came at him with the Lester offer, and I'm telling you now, if this whole plan is Bloom coming here to move away and trade away Bogaerts and Devers after he moved Betts, even guys like me are going to second guess even watching this team where that effing guy is running the front office.
Yeah, so Tom, I'll tell you what, and again, we can blame Bloom if we want. It really goes to ownership. So remember, Bloom was hired by ownership. If he's running it this way, this is what they wanted. Okay, that's what they wanted. So Chaim Bloom, to me, in this particular discussion, is nothing more than a conduit. Is this the way the Red Sox want to do business now? This is how they want to do it. We're not going to sign any guy that we draft who's a good player. once he gets to 6 years, we're going to let him go and bring in the next guy. That's how they're going to do it? Good luck winning a championship. Because I don't think that that's going to get it done. Now, with regard to Bogarts, I would tell you that Xander Bogarts and Trevor Story, take the money out of it. Oh, my God, it's not even close. It's not even close. And I'll concede that what we've seen so far from Story is not the real Trevor Story. He's a better player than he's played, but he is not Xander Bogarts. Which brings me to Anthony on the Cape. Go ahead, Anthony. What do you got?
Yeah, well, first of all, you got to realize, Tony, it's not about, oh, go 6-7 years and get rid of everybody. You understand, Bloom got brought in and they missed the window to sign Devers early. So moving forward with Meyer and with Cassis and guys like that, you got to get that, you know, that Franco contract out there from Tampa. But let me just tell you with Bogarts, and Tony, you know this guy's a first-half player, okay? Look at his career. The guy's always hitting 330, 340 the first half. He tails off. He's 290 by the end of the season. I like the guy. He plays hard. He's in good shape. I like Bogarts. He's a good ball player. He's not a $30 million ball player. Tony, come on.
Okay, Anthony, you know what I think? I think you're full of crap. That's what I think. And does he fade in the second half? Yeah, some. He was pretty good in that playoff game against the Yankees last year, wasn't he, when he homered in the first inning? And I thought overall Bogarts played pretty well, I would say, very late in the year last year. And you want to say, and before I make excuses for him, how's Trevor Story in the second half? Do you know that? Or what are the alternatives? How many guys, like, break it down for me. Tell me how many guys that you know that are better than Xander Bogarts in the second half that play the same position. And why are you worried about the $30 million? And what do you mean he's not a $30 million player? Based on what? Because there are a lot of guys now that are $30 million players. Is Corey Seager a $30 million player? Because he's making it. Carlos Correa, is he a $30 million player? Because Bogarts' numbers are better offensively. So I think you're talking out your ass. That's what I think. But I'll tell you what, we can disagree on what kind of player Xander Bogarts is. When you say they missed the window to sign Devers, what, because it had to take place earlier? They tried with Mookie Betts early. He said no. What makes you believe that Tristan Cassis or who's the other guy you mentioned? Meyer, the shortstop, Marcelo Meyer. What guarantees you that they're going to sign early on? That you're going to get the Wander Franco contract? And I got news for you, by the way. You know what's going to happen with Wander Franco? When he gets to those years and the contract with the salary goes up, Tampa's going to move him too. So you can celebrate the quote-unquote Wander Franco contract as if Tampa made some sort of big move. All Tampa did was secure the salary so that when they trade him, teams are going to know what they have to pay him. They made him more tradable in some ways at the end. That's what they did. Mookie Betts, on the other hand, when he hit the market, was only, when he was traded, only had 1 year left on his deal. So the Red Sox might have gotten less for him. So Tampa signing him has nothing to do with keeping the player. It's about fixing the cost for when they trade him, in case you wanted to know. But the Mookie Betts deal, interesting that the caller brought up the idea of trading these guys. How good is Chaim Bloom at it? More importantly, how much confidence do you really have? We'll examine some of the key deals he has made here in his early tenure as GM of the Red Sox as it pertains to position players. We'll do that when we come back on the Baseball Hour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now, more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
One more strike to get. There's Verdugo right on the spot. He's got it, and the Red Sox win it. Final score tonight, 6-3 Boston, knocking off Houston here.
got the six runs. Bats doing a great job. Xander Bogaerts with a huge homer. But the pitching did a great job, and the defense did an even better job tonight.
And the headband was not too shabby.
Hey, baby.
Red Sox win it 6-3.
Yeah, that was late last night at Fenway Park. I'll say this. Xander Bogaerts made this comment after the game last night. Since he is the topic du jour, really, of the week, and again, until further notice, I think Xander Bogaerts is the topic, period, with this Red Sox team this year. Until they play themselves back in it. There are other stories, too, but that's the biggest one. The win last night, if I'm not mistaken now, the Red Sox are what? 4-2 in their last six games? I know that's a very small sample, but it's a step in the right direction. They split with the Braves. The game that they lost was at least close, 5-3. The ones over the weekend, they took 2 out of 3 in Texas. They got smoked in the last one in a bullpen game. They scored 6 last night. They beat the Astros, who were a good team. Obviously, we know the Astros from the American League Championship Series last year. So I do feel like the Red Sox are playing better. But I want to get back to Chaim Bloom, really, and the idea that Chaim Bloom was brought in here to do exactly what the Tampa Bay Rays do. And I don't disagree with that assessment, by the way. Again, I think Bloom is really the conduit. It's Red Sox ownership saying this is how we want to do it now, which is fine, I guess. As long as you win it, I really don't care how you do it. But I honestly think the Red Sox need to be in the market for every player possible all the time, and that to win, you have to do it that way, particularly if you want to win championships, which I'll get to in a minute as well. But Bloom, since he has come here, his first really big move was the Mookie Betts trade. I think we can all agree on that. He had to trade Mookie Betts. Murray, how do we feel that the Red Sox did in the Mookie Betts deal?
Not very well.
Jimmy Stewart, how do you feel they did in the Mookie Betts deal?
Loss, massive loss.
I mean, couldn't you say it's really getting worse by the day?
Yes.
Mookie Betts was traded, even with 1 year left on his contract. I think the Dodgers were willing to give up something to get Mookie Betts because they thought they could re-sign him. And they did re-sign him. The Red Sox got Alex Verdugo, Jeter Downs, and Connor Wong. So this year, right now, Alex Verdugo, 206, 3 home runs, 16 RBI, 566. Last year, he had a 763 OPS. I'm sorry, let me rephrase. His career in Boston, 232 games. He's at 281 with a 763 OPS. Decent. He's a decent big league outfielder. In fact, at the time, I remember saying he's Andrew Benintendi. So one of those guys was going to get traded. So you tell me, in retrospect, would you have been better off keeping Andrew Benintendi and getting something else other than Alex Verdugo? Because my answer would be yes. Jeter Downs, in the past 2 years, has appeared in 131 games for a AAA, or in the minors. He is batting 190 with a 605 OPS. Career minor leaguer. This year he's at 212, but overall 190 in the minor years. 212. Jeter Downs, bust. Bust. The other guy he got in the deal was Connor Wong, who feels like a backup catcher. So we can see what happens with Wong as we get down the road. He's had 19 career at-bats with the Red Sox, 263 average, not many games. 66 games in the minors for Boston. Not great numbers, 167 average. This year, I'm sorry, I got this backwards. 256 last year, 167 this year. So Connor Wong is down to 167. Jeter Downs has done nothing since you got him. And if Verdugo is a carbon copy of Benintendi, you traded Benintendi because you didn't want to pay him because you had Verdugo. Why couldn't you? I mean, I guess Verdugo's cheaper, so that's good. But it's not like you improved the position. I think Verdugo, to me, is becoming really frustrating. So I would say overall, Chaim Bloom on that deal got crushed. Crushed. The Red Sox got crushed. So this is one of those that I love. Would you rather have Mookie Betts at $35 million? And I'm not telling you I would have paid Betts either. More importantly, I don't think Betts wanted to be here. Or do you have three prospects with the idea that one of them might turn into something or they could all suck? I'll take the bird in hand. But I'll tell you what, let's go farther down the road. Let's examine some of the other trades quickly that Chaim Bloom has made. The Andrew Benintendi deal. How do we feel about that one?
Not good.
Andrew Benintendi, the Red Sox got a package of minor leaguers for him. Josh Winkowski, who's a AAA, has pitched decent here in the early part of the year, but we haven't seen him in the big leagues yet. Doesn't feel to me like a front-end kind of guy, but we'll see how that shakes out. Franchi Cordero, who's improved over what he was last year, which was terrible. So I don't know if that's in a great direction. And then Luis DeRosa, Grant Gambrill, and Freddy Valdez. Three basically teenagers, A-ball, low A-ball players. None of whom has amounted to anything, and Gambrill's now back in the Kansas City organization after having a 7 ERA with the Red Sox last year. So I would say on the Benintendi deal, right now, nothing. Maybe Winkowski, we'll see how that goes. But I feel like he lost that one, at least as of now. Let's see how Winkowski pans out. Maybe it's too early. Finally, Hunter Renfroe. And this isn't in the quite the same class, but Hunter Renfroe was traded to Milwaukee. The Red Sox got Jackie Bradley Jr. They took on that contract, and they got David Hamilton and Alex Benellis. Both of those guys are actually playing well. So Hamilton at AA Portland is actually has an OPS of 863 this year. 17 for 20 in stolen bases. He's actually hit for a little bit of power, some extra base power. And Benellis has a 901 OPS. Again, that's at high A ball. So on that one, Bloom looks pretty good. But the big one, obviously, was Betts, which they whiffed on massively. Massive whiff. Benintendi, I'll call a coin flip. And the last one I'll say right now is a win for Bloom. So that's three big league positional players that they got. One of whom is all-star caliber or all-star and potentially Hall of Fame caliber. And I would tell you that right now what they have is a kid at A-ball who looks like he could be pretty good. We'll see. A kid at Double-A who looks decent. And a pitcher that we really don't know anything about. So this is what we want to do with Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers going forward, as opposed to paying them and finding other ways to get prospects because you don't want to pay your star players. I can't sign on for that one. I can't. Jeff's in Worcester. Jeff, go.
Thanks for having me on. So my grade on Bloom would be an F for this year. When you look at their winning percentage and the amount they're paying, this is one of the historically worst pay-for-performance teams in the history of baseball. And I put most of that on Bloom. As for Mookie Betts...
Jeff, I'm going to let you go there. Again, this year you want to give him an F. I'm fine with giving just about anybody an F on the team this year because, frankly, they've been horrible thus far. The last week has been better. If they dig themselves out of it, I'll change my mind. But I do think that Chaim Bloom could have done more to help this team, and he hung them out to dry a little bit, maybe a lot. And I don't know how much of that is predicated or predicted or required by ownership. The Trevor Story signing doesn't feel like the kind of move that Bloom would make, which tells me ownership reacted to public pressure or clubhouse pressure on that one, which I think is a mistake. So I'm pissed too this year. I'm worried about Bloom in the long term. Again, we'll get to what the goal is in a minute. I'm just trying to assess what has happened so far. Frank and Revere, quickly on Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah, hi, Tony. You know what I'm thinking is that, you know, we throw around this $30 million price tag. That there's a lot of players that are making money like that and really don't even deserve it. All I'm saying is Bogaerts is a good to great player. Right in that thing, my opinion. And so what I'm saying is he wants to stay here. It's the market price. Why wouldn't they sign him? He wants to be here.
I agree, Frank. The market price is what it is when people say he's not a $30 million player. Who is? Is Corey Seager? Corey Seager's not a $30 million player. Nobody is who goes to market. This is the whole point. You go to free agency, the price goes up. So what, now you're not going to sign any free agents? But sometimes you have to do it for the good of your team. And not just because of the clubhouse culture or anything else, but because you're trying to win championships. Or you go out and you sign Trevor Story as a backup case. We'll get to Trevor Story here in a minute, or as leverage, I should say, not as a backup case, as a backup plan is what I meant. We'll get to Trevor Story, homered last night. Is he turning a corner? I'll tell you what I think when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
High fly ball driven deep. That's way back there. And it's way out of Fenway. And this game is tied. And there may be some magic in that headband.
Yes, sir. Send it, Trevor. Man, just got that. It looked like the swerve that just stayed up. Spun it nicely out of the ballpark.
Again, that happened last night. Big home run by Trevor Story. I don't want to overlook that. Red Sox were down in the game 3-2. Story tied it up. They get into the bottom of the eighth. J.D. Martinez breaks the tie, and then Bogarts hits a two-run home run to open it up. I was going to say win it. 6-3. But Trevor Story, again, spent a lot of time on Bogarts because over the weekend, Bogarts said he'd be open to the idea of re-signing here if the Red Sox approach him with an offer that was fair. Scott Boras immediately came out here in the last day and said, Bogarts is going to opt out. He's going to be a free agent. We'll talk then. Okay, so the agent always hates it when the player comes out and says something like that because he's killing the market. Okay, he wants to be able to cultivate interest in Bogarts as the year goes along. So that by the time the fall comes along, he's got four or five people lined up. But Bogarts and Story are linked and will forever be linked. Unless somehow, well, regardless, I was going to say unless somehow Bogarts stays here, Story goes. But regardless, they are linked. The Red Sox signed Trevor Story, at least in part, if not entirely, to leverage Xander Bogarts in negotiations. Story has played poorly thus far. He hit a second home run last night. This one was off of, Phil Maiden of the Astros. I hope I pronounced that right. And, you know, it was a blast over the left field wall. It's Story's second home run now in a week. He homered last week against Ian Kennedy. And I told you I wasn't all that big on that one because he hit a changeup. But he's still hitting 200, Story is, although he did get a couple of hits in Texas. It looks like he's swinging the bat better, starting to come out of it a little bit. Jimmy, should I be buying in on Trevor Story now? How do you feel?
Not a chance. Get this guy out of here at the deadline. He's Edgar Renteria 2.0.
Okay. Murray, do you have any confidence or faith that Trevor Story has turned it around and all of a sudden will be a factor with the Red Sox?
No, I think he's Corey Crawford 2.0.
Okay. You mean Carl Crawford?
Carl Crawford. That's
okay. Yeah, but that's okay. I know what I know who you meant.
Of course, that was the goaltender for the Blackhawks the year they beat the Bruins.
Exactly.
Very good, Jimmy.
Exactly, Jimmy. Very well. Well done. Let me tell you why I'm not buying in on Trevor Story yet. His home run last week, I told you this, was on a changeup from a right-handed pitcher. So Story got a ball hanging out over the middle of the plate at 87 miles an hour and belted it. Great. I'm not telling you that's a bad thing. I'm just telling you that it was 87 miles an hour. You know what the pitch that he hit last night was? 79. Hanging slider in the middle of the plate. 79 miles per hour. Now, if the pitch had better break on it, was on the outside part of the plate, he wouldn't have hit it at all. But nonetheless, players are paid to hit mistakes. But the part that sticks out to me on this one is 79. So the more that I watch Story, the more that I look at the numbers, here's the conclusion I've come to. I keep saying to people, Trevor Story can't cover the outside part of the plate. And you know why? Because he's gearing up for the fastball on the inside part of the plate, and he can't hit it. Trevor Story has to cheat to hit the fastball particularly up in the zone on the inner part of the plate. That's why his stance is the way it is, which is open. That guy right there is telling you, I don't think I can get around on a fastball on the inside part of the plate, so I'm opening up my stance a little bit so I can get to it. That then makes him unable to cover the outside part of the plate. But it's all born out of his inability to hit velocity. His strikeout percentage, Trevor Story, is basically striking out once every three at-bats this year. And he hasn't hit fastballs or sliders away. So, to me, not only can he not cover the outside part of the plate, I'm not sure he can cover the inside part of the plate. He's got a slow bat, or he's had a slow bat. The only balls he's hit out of the ballpark this year were on an 87-mile-an-hour changeup and a fat slider at 79 in the middle of the plate. It just hung there in the middle of the plate, and he belted it. So this is the guy that is going to replace Xander Bogaerts, who, by the way, turned on a 94-mile-an-hour fastball and belted it over the left field wall last night. Just saying. Let's go to Mark in South Boston on the Mookie Betts deal as it relates to Chaim Bloom. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, Tony. I think that Bloom gets a D for that. Only reason he doesn't get an F is because they got rid of Price in the deal. I know they have to pay some of his contract, but that deal was Mookie and Price for those three guys, and they got rid of David Price, and I think that's the best part of that deal, the only good part of that deal, I should say.
Okay, so Mark, you make an interesting point, and again, Price is still on the payroll for $16 million, but it could have been $31 million, and so the Red Sox still retain slightly more than half of that, but even so, they saved $15 million. I'd feel better about that if they used that $15 million to sign a long-term contract with Xander Bogaerts, so you can see where I'm going with this. What good is saving the money on a guy like David Price, if instead of spending the 15, and I'm just using that number because that's the amount they saved on that deal, instead of taking the 15 and going to get a player, they decide to get, you know, three or five players at $3 million instead of one at 15. You follow me? This is what sort of the whole Tampa Bay logic is built on. The whole Tampa Bay logic is built on, we're going to spread the money around. We have a better chance of hitting. And that way, when we do get a player, he's cheap. And the other guys, if they pan out, we can either keep or move, but et cetera, et cetera. We increase our likelihood of getting inexpensive players, which is all well and good. But to what end? Okay. And to me, this is the $64,000 question. And believe it or not, it was triggered in my head by something Bruce Cassidy of the Bruins said today. Bruce Cassidy, coach of the Bruins, did an interview today with the media, exit interviews, etc. I'll tell you what he said and how it relates to Chaim Bloom when we come back on the baseball.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now more baseball and more men.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Take some calls here in the final minute if you want. 617-779-0985. Final few minutes. But I said before we went to break that Bruce Cassidy of the Bruins, and again, I want to do more on this tomorrow night, but Bruce Cassidy of the Bruins, coach, said something today amid the exit interviews that struck me as interesting, okay, as it relates to the Red Sox, which, let me play it for you. Here is what Bruce Cassidy said when, he was assessing the team's play against Carolina, and one of his points was, hey, look, we ran into a really good team in the first round. So, it's easy to say we got bounced in the first round, but if they go on and win the cup, then, the point is that it took a great team to beat us in seven games. But then Cassidy said this. Go ahead, Jimmy.
To say we weren't a contender, I think, yeah, if you don't get out of the first round, that's not what we want. We want to win a Stanley Cup. That's what we're here for.
Okay, to say that we're not contender, that's not what we want. We want to win a Stanley Cup. That's what we're here for. We want to win a Stanley Cup. That's what we're here for. Chaim Bloom over the last couple of years has been asked repeatedly over and over again at the trade deadline, roster building, all those things about some of the decisions that he has made. Here's what he has said.
I still think we have to keep our goal in mind of making sure that the biggest goal, I think the biggest obligation we have to our fans is to make sure we are as good as possible for as long as possible and to be able to get to the point where we can compete for a World Series every year and stay there.
Okay, compete for a World Series every year and stay there. Be as good as possible for as long as possible. Cassidy says in no uncertain terms, the goal is to win a Stanley Cup. Chaim Bloom says the goal is to be as good as possible for as long as possible and compete. Murray, is there a difference?
Yeah. Bloom is a little more vague in the way that he's breaking what their goals are for the franchise are. And Cassidy's far more specific. So, yeah, there's a difference.
Okay, and so I would ask fans this. Is there a difference in your mind? Because there's a big difference in mine. The whole idea of, well, we just want to compete for championships every year, which is what the Tampa Bay Rays do, and they never win. It's what the Minnesota Twins used to do, but they never win.
The old Oakland model.
It's what the Oakland A's used to do, but they never win. And you know why they never win? Because they never put the actual title ahead of the importance to compete every year for a title. There's a difference there. There's a big difference there. Once you get to the point where you are competing for championships, you are then faced with decisions in the short term. That's what you're faced with. Am I going to make the extra move to put us over the top? Theo Epstein resisted doing that in Chicago until they got to a certain point and then made the deal for Aroldis Chapman and they won the World Series. He probably lost the trade, but he was willing to make a deal to put the team over the top. Is Chaim Bloom willing to do that? Are the Red Sox now willing to do that? That's my question. And again, I say Chaim Bloom, let's go to ownership because they hired him. Do the Red Sox just want to be good every year now?
Yes.
And they're not even that this year. So do they just want to get to the point where, well, we'll hang in there, we'll compete, we'll lose in the end? Like last year? Is that what they're looking to do?
Yes.
Feels that way.
Is that the goal?
I mean, consistency can be summed up in a few ways, Maz.
So is yogurt and wheat thins.
But again, I would tell you, tell me what the goal is. What's the goal? This is my question now for the Red Sox. What do you want to be? Do you want to win championships, or do you just want to be a team that's good every year and can compete for championships? He didn't say win them. He said compete. Because why? Because there are variables in winning championships that are hard to nail down and quantify. So then you're admitting what? 04 was a fluke? 07 was a fluke? Let alone 13 and 18? Because I would tell you those years weren't flukes. 04 wasn't a fluke. You know what happened before the 04 season? The Red Sox went out and got Keith Foulke and Curt Schilling and put them over the top. And 07 wasn't a fluke.
The team was a wagon.
You know what the Red Sox did? They went out and made big moves in between 04 and 07. They traded for Josh Beckett. They got Mike Lowell on board. Beckett was the MVP of the league championship series. Or was it the World Series? No, Lowell was the World Series. Beckett was the LCS. They were both MVPs of big postseason wins. So they added players and payroll, let alone Matsuzaka, JD Drew, those guys. And you can say those moves worked or didn't, but the point is they were aggressive. 18, do I have to tell you? David Price, Chris Sale. Now, maybe that one came at too great a cost, but at least they went for the freaking championship. And I do think that in retrospect, Dave Dombrowski was overly aggressive because they could have won that championship without some of the moves that he made. More importantly, he didn't restock the farm system. So this is the part, this is what I want to know. Do you just want to compete for championships or do you actually want to win them? That is my question for the Red Sox, starting with ownership. Do you want to compete for the championships or do you want to win them? Because I want to win them. And I think most fans do too. Jacob, quickly in a car, go.
Hey,
Hey, how's it going? So I get what you're saying as it pertains to the best trade, but if you haven't signed here as well as Bogarts, Devers, Price, Eovaldi, and Sale, you may not have enough room on the payroll to invest more in the pitching staff. And I get that they're the Red Sox, but ownership in Heim Bloom isn't going to have four hefty contracts on the payroll, especially if most of it's invested offensively.
Okay, so Jacob, the part that I don't get is you're not going to have money to fill out the pitching staff. Fill it out with who? It doesn't feel like they're signing big money players, period. So what, you think that because they save on Bogarts, they're all of a sudden going to go out and sign a $25 million, $30 million pitcher? I don't. I think that they've used $23 million of it already on Trevor Story. Quickly, we'll squeeze in one more. Mike in Rhode Island, go.
Hey, I just want to say, when we played Miami in the bubble, we got absolutely killed by the 2-3 zone.
Okay, we're not doing basketball right now. So I'll tell you what, we're going to leave it at that. That's the last call of the night. It's something to think about going tomorrow, and again, going into tomorrow, rather, and going into tonight's game, the Red Sox game I'm talking about, but I want to get into it more tomorrow. What's the goal of the organization now? What's the goal? What is the Red Sox mission? I think I have an idea based on the fact that Chaim Bloom was brought in here. I have an idea. I have an idea based on what Sam Kennedy said at the end of last season. So is that what it is now? We want to compete for championships every year? Compete. Like the Bruins did in the 80s. Or the Red Sox did for 86 years. Or at least the last half of that. We want to compete for championships. Actually winning them, that's something different. But we want to compete. Great. I love that. Let's put a good product out there. And then when it comes time to commit and really go all in to win, we'll stop short and lose. Let's do that. I love that idea. That's a great idea. Jim Murray's got your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.